So once again, a president finds some political cover in national security issues in the midst of a challenging economy.
The Gaddafi regime is coming to an end, and the future of Libya is in the hands of its people.
Here's the president speaking yesterday from his vacation spot in Martha's Vineyard. 5 months ago, the decision to deploy U.S. air and intelligence assets in the NATO air campaign was a politically risky one. Yesterday, though, the president's tone suggested that at least he thinks the risk paid off. The downfall of Muammar Gaddafi imminent.
Although it's clear that Gaddafi's rule is over, he still has the opportunity to reduce further bloodshed by explicitly relinquishing power to the people of Libya and calling for those forces that continue to fight to lay down their arms for the sake of Libya.
But as Gaddafi holds on this morning in Tripoli, all assumptions about the political risks of U.S. involvement in the war on Libya perhaps need to be tested. And joining us now to do just that is Mark Landler, White House correspondent for our partner, The New York Times, who's been following the president out on Martha's Vineyard all week long. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, John.
Is there a political calculation here? Does the president, take some sort of credit for an operation that produced some controversy 5 months ago?
I think he does. Remember, when he made the decision to take part in the NATO air campaign, he took a lot of fire from really both sides of the political spectrum. Some Republican hawks like John McCain wanted the U.S. to do more. Liberal Democrats, Dennis Kucinich and people like that, complained that the U.S. should pull out and that he had not asked Congress for congressional authorization through the War Powers Resolution. So it was an unpopular move for him on all sides. And I think to the extent that events end well in Libya, and that's, of course, a huge if at this moment, the president feels he can take credit for a strategy that helped the rebels accomplish their goal while limiting American involvement at a time when he knew that greater American involvement would probably be impossible to sell politically at home.
We're talking with White House correspondent for our part of the New York Times, Mark Landler. You know, let's get a sense from your sources around the White House of how vulnerable they might think that they are here on either Libya or on their need to distract Americans away from the economy. We understand that after Labor Day, the president's going to talk about this jobs proposal. I don't know if you saw humorist Andy Borowitz a week or so ago describing the headline out of the White House, of course, fictitiously, new White House strategy, kill Osama bin Laden again. Is there a calculus that security trumps the economy?
Well, I think that there's a realistic view that security is not going to be the deciding factor in next year's election. They know that the president has had a dismal stretch. They know that he's extremely vulnerable on the economy. And I think they also know that unless he solves that, he may not be reelected. I do think they believe that if you can counter the traditional narrative that Democratic presidents are weak on national security, that's a valuable thing to bring into an election year. And they feel that having gotten bin Laden and being perhaps on the verge of getting Gaddafi or contributing to the effort to get Gaddafi, that they can neutralize that traditional line of attack on a Democrat. I mean, what's sort of ironic is that President Obama looks a bit like President George H.W. Bush did the year before he ran for reelection. Very strong or reasonably strong on foreign policy, but weak on the economy. And we all know how that ended.
Indeed. Mark Landler, White House correspondent for our partner in the New York Times. Stay safe up there in Martha's Vineyard, Mark.
I'll do my best. I don't think the risks are great here. Thanks, John.
With the President Obama up in Martha's Vineyard, and we thank him for that. Mark Landler, of course, White House correspondent for the New York Times. So, Michael, who's been with us all hour long, the question of domestic politics is one thing, but there's also a question of what this means for our perception internationally in the world. Listen to one of our listeners.
Mark, from Edmond, Oklahoma, is there the leadership in NATO to form a Marshall Plan for Libya and other newly liberated Islamic nations?
Michael Waheed Hanna, does NATO and the international community led by the United States do a rebuilding effort, and will that be perceived broadly around the world as consistent with Obama's sort of incoming issues of bolstering U.S. identity in the world?
Well, I think first and foremost, it's a decision that has to be made by whatever Libyan governing authority fills the transition. It's not a decision for the United States. I think there's a possibility and a potential for positive relations with a new Libyan government, but they're the ones that have to decide what role the international community will play Libya is not going to be in the same situation as some other transitional countries in that they do have resources and funds. Frozen funds are going to come to government coffers soon. And that's something that the transitional council is pressing.
But I'm a little surprised here. It sounds like what you're saying, and I don't mean to be a cynic, that there's no real play here for an American president to stand up and express leadership over Libya, that really it's a Libyan phenomenon and that the U.S. needs to stay out of the way. That suggests a transition globally.
Well, I think one, you know, if there would have been inaction, I think there would have been widespread room for criticism of the United States. I think if Benghazi had been sacked, there would have been mounting outrage at the West, NATO, and the United States' inability to protect the Libyan people, particularly at a moment of change in the region. So I think we have averted that possibility.
But that's a bizarre takeaway in the sense, I mean, and I'm not disputing it, that only downside if you do nothing. But you don't get much upside if you actually take action in the 21st century
right
now. Well,
I think there is some upside in the fact that we were restrained. I mean, I think the policy has gotten a lot of criticism, but it was effective, I think, to the degree it has been so far, because the United States wasn't in the lead and wasn't an overbearing presence. And this was something that the Libyans did primarily.
Should we ruin Michael's day before we go? Get him to predict when Gaddafi is going to emerge?
Anyway. Why ask me? Well, Michael?
Gaddafi, in a month? In a year?
2 days. They're 500 yards from
his
compound.
You had a clip with the British, the former British ambassador said, you know, maybe he'll disappear off the face of the planet. I find that one a little hard to believe, but you know, I think he'll turn up at some point. I think he likes. He's too vain a man that
loves
I'm sure will have audio.
30
tapes,
minutes, Michael. So you're going with 30 minutes.
30 minutes, right,
Michael?
Sure.
But he will not disappear from the face of the earth. Michael Wahid-Hanna, thanks so much for spending the hour with us.
Thank you.
Michael Wahid-Hanna is a fellow at the Century Foundation, where he focuses on international security, human rights, and U.S. policy in the Middle East. Thanks so much.
A lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.